We are delighted, of course, to be brought to you once again in association with oldfootballshirts.com and a home of over 90,000 shirts now, people. That's amazing. But this is the Albion Raw, and since we last spoke, we've had two players at the World Cup, which became three after signing Nigerian international Leon Balogun from Mainz. Our cat and mouse chase to capture Florian Andonia became £12 million cheaper after Deportivo La Coruña's relegation triggered a cut price release clause. With much regret, we wave goodbye to Connor Goldson and joined Steven Gerrard's Rangers. We welcome new goalkeeper Jason Steele from Sunderland. We said ta-ta for now to Christian Walton, who rejoined Wigan on loan. We signed our first Brazilian in the shape of Bernardo Fernandes da Silva Jr., known as Brazilian Bernie, of course, who joins from RB Leipzig. We said goodbye to Liam Rossini, Steve Sidwell, Nicky Mempire and Tim Krul. Max Sanders was named in the England 19 squad. We welcomed another goalkeeper in the shape of David Button from Fulham. Mali international Yves Bissouma was next to join from Lille. South African starlet Percy Tell also signed on the dotted line, but will be going off on loan. Our high-profile friendly against Sporting Club de Portugal bit the dust after they double-booked themselves. Nantes stepped in to save the day. We broke our transfer record. I'm out of breath now. We broke our transfer record to land Alireza Jahamba. We said goodbye to Sam Baldock, who has joined Reading, and we welcome back Bobby Zamora as club ambassador, and we also welcome back Liam Rossini. It's like he's never been away. Right. Well, have I missed anything?
Yes, Yuri Skalak has gone to Millwall.
Yes, he has.
Yes.
I've got that but later on.
But you've been listening to the Albion Raw. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week. Cheers.
And so,
that was the longest intro you've ever done.
It was quite... Well, it's been... You know what? I thought nothing had happened this summer. Then I started writing it down. And then it's gone on forever. It's we've got a lot to get through. And I'm going to get it through with, of course, Marcus Hancocks, with Andy Bass, and, of course, Alan Wares.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, and welcome back to the Albion Raw.
We're near the 15th hello. Season of this now, aren't we, already?
I know.
We're at the start of the 4th. Anyway, yes, hope you all summered well. We're nearly ready to get going. We're doing this just before the Nantes game, so we have no idea what our newbies are going to be like, but we've got a whole load of stuff to talk about. We've got a whole load of stuff to talk about throughout the season. But if I can hand you back to my esteemed colleague, A.D. Packham, who is actually going to present the rest of the show.
I am. And we're going to start with a little bit of an overview on what we think about last season, actually. I mean, and now the dust has settled. I mean, how do you actually look back on last season, Marcus?
I look back on it as an immense success. I think we finished higher than we were realistically expecting. I know that people were saying that in the event the shake-up of the points was that we were safe by the Arsenal game with the amount of points that we got, but we weren't actually safe, and so the Man United win at home. To end the season effectively with a win over Man United at home, I'm not counting the City and Liverpool away games, because they were, from a Brighton point of view, dead rubbers anyway, because the season was done by the Man United at home game. An absolute triumph. Basically, I can't give the team and Chris enough plaudits for what was a brilliant debut season in the Premier League.
You believe it exceeded your expectations? If you rewind to this time last season, this time last year,
yeah,
we did better than you felt.
Absolutely, it was nice to be safe with, you know, at no point was that team in the relegation zone, as far as I'm aware, and I'm not counting the first two games of the season or whatever.
Like mid-September we left it or something.
Yeah, exactly, which is right at the beginning of the season.
You don't look at the table until after 10 games.
You're right, absolutely. But, you know, when the serious business of the league started, well, it's serious from game one, but having said that, at no point was we ever really threatened with relegation. There was a couple of looking over your shoulder moments, but it was never at any point did I think, oh, we're in deep doo-doo
here.
Okay,
Andy?
Well, I think Marcus pretty much said it all. I thought it was a terrific season. It was hard work going. So it was one of the few years where I've actually done most of the games. I think I only missed like five out of the 38. But it was good. I mean,
so you only went to 33 games last season.
I only went to
30.
You lazy. Okay. Yeah. I did 36.
Yeah, there you go. Marcus wins. But I mean, it was brilliant. I really enjoyed watching us at home. I thought the atmosphere at home games was absolutely superb. I thought the team really turned up at home as well. Most games away from home, it was a different story. It was a lot tougher. But there were some very creditable performances in there. I don't think we looked like a rabbit in the headlights at any point in the season. I thought we handled the step up really well, and it was a very mature performance. I think, you know, there's some deficiencies in the squad which limited really what we could do, and we coped with that admirably. And as Marcus said, full credit to the players and the coaching staff. They did an absolutely great job, and to basically nail it with a win at, you know, against Man United, which for me was, that game was as much fun as the Wigan game when we got promoted.
But I mean, even when we lost heavily last season, Al, which was probably the Liverpool home game and the Chelsea home game, we came out of that actually not downhearted. We were actually quite pleased with our performance.
I think the only time there was a level of rabbits in the headlight really was the first game. And when you're playing Manchester City, and let's face it, Man City did tear some teams apart quite brutally last season. Yes, Liverpool was a real sort of men against boys thing. I mean, every time we tried to attack, they just legged up the other end and scored again. And Chelsea, that was kind of, we were undone by, you know, let's face it, Chelsea just for once away from home turned up that day.
Hazard was the best player I saw last season.
Absolutely. Him and Willian, they you know, when you score a goal of the season, we've got two back heels, you think, well, there's nothing you can do about that. Well, there is, but, you know, it only involves red cards.
Was that voted their goal of the season? I didn't actually
It was a goal. It was a goal of the month. It was one of the contenders, so it was, you know, it was brilliant in its way. And when you're 2-0 down after 5 minutes against Chelsea, you think, oh, how do you get out of this? And so you've got this enormous mountain to climb. And I remember Gary Lineker saying, you know, that wasn't a 4-0 game.
No, it wasn't, because I mean, with a different referee, we could have had two penalties before half time, and we could have been going in 2-2. I mean that particular game.
You can't
game
go
was,
down that particular road though.
But
really,
that game was the first time we trialled playing three at the back. And I would have liked to have seen us persevere with it, but that's we're talking about that matter entirely.
But that's more dealing with the threat against you.
But Marcus, what lessons have we got to learn that we can carry forward from last season?
I think Andy's touched on it already, in the sense of, I think we need to be a bit more adventurous away from home against the teams in and around us. However, I can understand why Chris used the, I know he all joked about sort of cautious Chris, you know, that is a tongue-in-cheek comment, because obviously he wanted to ensure Premier League survival. I think there was times away from home where we could have, if we were a bit more oomph, and I'm minded to think of Newcastle away springs to mind. Newcastle in a terrible run at that point. The fans were on the back. I was there at the game. It was just before New Year. And you know what? We're sort of looking around saying, if we'd have just gone for it that little bit more, we probably would have come away with the 3 points, because Newcastle were at that point not playing very well. The fans are on their back. I know they since climbed the table and got out of it, but at that particular moment in time, that is a classic example of a game with a bit more oomph. And I think that's what Chris has learnt, which is why he signed some more attacking players.
And if we'd have played that game about a month later, when the handbrake was released a little bit,
precisely, then, you know, I think, then, yes, you know, you're right.
It's about timing. And I know that we were, before we came on air, we were talking about the nature of timing and what have you. I mean, let's face it, that was a carefully crafted season from Chris Hughton, picking up points where we could. I mean, there were times when we picked up points that we weren't expecting. Arsenal, Man United at home spring to mind.
Yes.
But then there was other games where, because we weren't rabbits in the headlights, where we came away with less than we deserved.
Yeah.
You know, Southampton away, Newcastle away. You know, there's times when you think, actually,
Stoke away. Yeah, Man United away. Yeah. That should have been a point. Yeah.
Okay, well, the season objective for this season is, of course, to stay above that fabled dotted line. Now, the fixture list hasn't been kind to us again. The start's tough, the end's tough. I mean, we all know that you've got to play everyone at some point, home and away. But the beginning and the end is particularly tough again.
Well, you know, you just got to take it on the chin and just go and play the next game. I think, you know, we did enough against the so-called, you know, against the top six teams. I think we put in some decent performances, and I don't think there's any reason why, you know, we can't go into those games hoping we catch them maybe on a bad day. But if, you know, but if we show more confidence in ourselves, that we can't get the odd result. We, you know, we did beat Manchester United at home. We did beat Arsenal, although, let's face it, Arsenal lost every away game last season. We should have beaten them on reflection. So, it's not impossible. We played creditably against, Liverpool and Chelsea at home. I mean, those games were closer than the results suggested. And so, yeah, we just get on with it. I think there are games like the Southampton and Huddersfield games. Those are games I felt that we maybe could have done a bit more. those are the games we kind of should be pushing on this season. And I think, you know, I mean, we're obviously going to go through the signings in the show, but that's what those guys have been brought in to do. And I think they're going to play a big part in helping us do that.
Actually, Marcus, Andy mate raised a good point there. Do you actually think that there was, particularly against the top six club, an element of fear going to those games, early doors last season?
Early doors away, I think at home, we got it right. We just got absolutely world-classed out of it. And the Liverpool game is a funny one, because that was fine margins, because Murray missed that effectively, or the keeper saved it, whichever you want to say. And in Liverpool, as Alan said, literally just went down the other end and scored straight away. And at that point, I think it would have been 2-1, possibly. And then it would have changed. I'm not saying it would have changed the whole game and then we would have ended up winning, but it would have changed the whole dynamic of the game. And then Liverpool go out the other end and make it 3-0. And I think it was in this kind of game. Or it was 2-1 and 2-2. I don't know.
Whatever it was.
So, rabbit in the head. I think like Arsenal away, when we played up there early in the season, well, it was about October, and some of the performances was very much a case of don't lose, damage limitation. We'll take the 2-0 now. Spurs away is another example of a game where we didn't really give it a go. It was literally just a case of, well, let's just concede a very mossy goal, but let's just keep it to two and let's you know get out of here and job done.
Well, one of the other objectives is we've already mentioned that we're going to need to pick up more points on the road. One of the other ones where we needed to prove vastly on last season was more goals from all over the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, one of the things that we were horribly missing, and it was actually probably highlighted in the World Cup, was from set pieces. I mean, you know, the number of corners. I mean, it's just an ongoing sort of tale of woe that we've had this season. I think Connor Goldson, who has since left, is the only person who scored from a corner.
He was directly from a corner.
Even Dunks was a kind of a headed back jobby. But I mean, the point is, you know, a corner comes in, head in. I mean, Shane Duffy won so many. I mean, they weren't even close. I mean, how many were on target?
I don't think any of them were.
That's why we've changed our away kit to green, because he'll feel at home. He scores in an island shirt.
Exactly.
No, I mean, but therein lies an issue. This, if we can get defenders to sort of weigh in, even if they weighed in with three or four each in the season, because they were winning the headers.
Exactly.
And the crosses were good. You got Pascal Gross, Solly March can do it. They'll put the ball on a sixpence. Yeah. But then you realise, instead of sixpence, Shane Duffy's got a 50p head.
Yeah.
And off it goes into orbit. You're quite right. I mean, the other players, you're talking about Proper and Stevens, now they weighed in with they weighed in with assists. But yes, it'd be nice to actually... But then this is the point
about... Stevens did score, but that was... it was an important goal. It was against Crystal Palace.
But exactly. The point is that they were shackled in and not going forward.
Yes.
Now, we don't know if Chris Hughton is actually going to change the formation and the style of how we play. And with the new players, we look forward to seeing... We'll be talking about that shortly, actually. My point is can you compare what's going to come up with the players that we've got and how we're going to play this season compared to last season? Because effectively, we're talking about not far off a brand new team.
I think
that's a really important point. I mean, we're kind of like going into this particular show blind, because last year we had very limited options. Hughton didn't have a big choice of players. Now he's got options all over. And, you know, he earned his money last season, but he's really got to earn it this season, because he's got some big decisions to make. And also, I think it's, you know, there are going to be players that were 100% regulars last year that are going to have to start watching their backs because you're going to have to be flipping good to get in this team next season, especially if you're a midfielder or a forward or a centre half.
And the other thing, of course,
or a fullback, even.
Or a
wide player. So, I mean, competition everywhere now, and that kind of makes predicting how we're going to do next season a little bit trickier than it was last year.
The other thing, Andy, with the Premier League this season is last season we lost three of the perennial strugglers. And the teams that have come up this season, you've seen Fulham spending £35 million on one player. You've got Wolves who are signing up the whole of Portugal.
But Stoke and West Brom had good seasons last year. I think Stoke finished 10th or something, 9th, 10th, something like that. Yeah. Top half of the table, yeah. You know, so they, I would not put Stoke or West Brom as perennial strugglers. I'd put them as sort of almost Premier League heavyweights in the sense that they've always been...
They were mid-table heavyweights. Mid-table weights.
Yeah, middleweights, yeah, basically.
There is always going to be three rubbish teams in the Premier League. Who it's going to be... Yeah. If anyone had, would have prepared to call out Swansea, Stoke and West Brom last season, I don't think anyone would have happily, easily predicted those three.
Yeah.
I mean, one or two of those three, but not all three.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to show you what I know, I predicted Burnley to finish bottom, so it was...
There you go. And therein lies the point. I mean, look, because Wolves are spending big, Fulham are spending big, and they've been in the Premier League recently, therefore they're going to go flying. You know, and you see the 4-4-2 prediction table, and you think, hang on, what is this based on? This is why this show doesn't do it, apart from the really silly predictions, which we'll come to presently, because it has no value. You just don't know. Mm. I mean, you know who the top six are going to be. That's a given. You don't know the order. But after that, then it's an absolute riot.
Yeah.
But because we survived last season and because we spent money this pre-season, do you think that there will be very much a case of managing people's expectations if we are struggling?
Well, I still don't expect us to be riding high in the table. I still expect us to be in that, you know, that league of 14 or whatever it is at the bottom. Mm. You know, that, you know, from six down, and you know, as I was saying, it's pretty much a crapshoot. I think, you know, there were some really poor teams last year, like West Ham, who've invested well, and they should be less rubbish this season. On the other hand, you look at, you know, maybe
Palace.
You look at maybe Palace or you know, even like the likes of Huddersfield, and you think, well, maybe they might not do as well as they did last season. Southampton, I don't, you know, it just kind of depends what the mood is at that club. I think we have strengthened. I think Newcastle,
they got problems as well.
Newcastle might be a surprise if they, you know, if they can't resolve the issues between the board and the management.
And we've got everyone facing the same direction. We still have a togetherness.
I think we're still going to be in that bottom half. I actually think we'll be safe a lot earlier this season.
But Marcus, last season was a rarity in the fact that all three promoted teams stayed up. It doesn't happen. That's the first time that happened for about 15, 16 years.
Yes, it is, and that can only be a good thing. For the league as a whole, simply because otherwise people were going up, taking them, trousering them cash and going down again. Teams like Cardiff spring to mind, Derby County, Sunderland done it a couple of times before they succumbed to the inevitable. It's a bit like Leicester when they won the Premier League. It kind of just gives other teams hope that, you know, they can get up and stay up. They've got to be sensible. Of course they have. That's an interesting stat.
Sure. I mean, it's something we asked on the show at some point last year. But, I mean, with the way where Burnley finished last year, can we now look at them as maybe being an aspirational team?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Leicester, I think, is way above our aspirational considerations. But Burnley, you can see that, you know, they've kept... I mean, the idea is that they've kept Sean Dyche after they got relegated and came back up again. They have that level of stability. I'm not so sure they can repeat it this time necessarily. Other teams will take them far more seriously when, as you pointed out, some felt they were relegation fodder and they played a lot better than that. They still weren't the most exciting team to watch and they weren't, you know, they weren't sort of battering everyone, but they got the results they needed.
I am still going to laugh at them a little bit because, I mean, you know, they managed to punch above their weight and they managed to get into that European spot. And, you know, and there were their fans looking forward to a trip to, Bulgaria. And they get Aberdeen.
Yeah. Ashley Barnes in Europe, blimey.
Well, he is Austrian.
Well, sort of. No, it's managing expectations. Yes, I mean we'll go through them presently. But when we've asked people to actually make their predictions for the season, so many of them are so much more positive than this time last year. And yes, the expectations. The nature of Chris Hughton and the club that Tony Bloom and Paul Barber are running is that you expect improvement all the time. You cannot sit still. You cannot stand still. You just can't do it. You know, we must improve all the time. And therefore, an improvement on last season is what is required. Whether we can achieve that, because obviously there's going to be 19 other clubs who are going to try and stop us doing that. But the club's aspiration will be to improve on what it is, like what it got last year.
It won't
they themselves will be disappointed if we don't.
Yeah.
But what that expectation is. When I see people saying we're going to get a top 10, top 8 finish, blimey. Now I'm thinking, actually, yeah.
Who's saying that?
Calm down.
I'm not naming names for fear of shaming the guilty.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on our podcast, well, on our podcast. And the show is, of course, brought to you in association with the fabulous oldfootballshirts.com. And, well, we've got a bit of a strange shirt of the week for you.
Beautifully photoshopped.
I quite like it. It's kind of...
Well, yeah, strange is the word, isn't it?
It is. About three shirts
it's
in
weird.
One. Okay, you know you ask us to describe this shirt.
Yeah, please
okay,
describe the shirt for me, okay, Andy.
Well, I could describe a car crash better.
It's got a load of stripes on it. Not all necessarily going in the same direction. And not all necessarily
the same colour.
The same two colours. We've got blue, a sort of dark cyan, some white. We've got up and down. We've got triangles. Whatever.
We've got the top half is Brighton blue and white stripes. The bottom half is old Brighton from Santex days of cyan and dark blue. Then we've got the kind of this chevron arrow pointing down, and then we've got.
A very subtle white band.
Yeah. Yeah, what words do we have on the shirt?
It says Ira Druckerei. Yeah. 3097 Lieberfeld.
And who is the manufacturer?
Runaway. Who's in the top?
Runaway.
In the top shoulder. Top
what
right hand,
on earth has Phil given
top
us?
Top right hand shoulder. Yeah, which is
and this is Fußball Club Sternenberg.
Yes, it is. It is. And this is what Phil Shelley from oldfootballshirts.com has to say about this particular shirt. He says, first of all, he says, Happy New Season.
Happy New Season to you, Phil. Blah, blah, blah.
He says, I've picked this shirt because it's a bit mad. And
a bit?
A bit.
And a bit horrible.
Mad.
It's nuts.
This is the 1997 to 1998 away shirt of Swiss amateur side FC Sternberg. They play in non-league football in Switzerland at the Schlatt Arena, which is the capacity of 3 blokes, a dog, and that's all the good.
And part. A goat.
And a Toblerone.
which is actually on the shirt.
What, a Toblerone?
Yeah.
The club works as a cooperative. Fans are invited to join and share in the financial stability of the club whilst benefiting from the club's various facilities.
Right, sorry, in that case, that makes sense of the shirt. That was designed by a committee.
Everybody got a bit of their design in it.
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah.
The top three designs were all included.
Yeah. Okay. 6 months before the Swiss national side went to the World Cup in 1966 and lost all three of their games, 22 diehard amateur Swiss footballers founded FC Sternberg. The club is based in the small town of Gasel to the south of Basel.
He's making this up, isn't he?
The team is named Sternberg after the name of the ruined castles on the hills just outside the town, rather than the town of Sternberg, which is to the northeast of Switzerland. I really can't find anything else of interest about this side or their players, past or present.
Thank heavens for that. Thank you, Phil, you absolute madman.
And, of course, that shirt will be appearing on our Facebook page, on our Twitter, and, of course, you can find it on oldfootballshirts.com.
I really wouldn't have a problem if Phil didn't put that up.
You've got to see it to believe it.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the carpet that is photographed on as well.
But I mean,
it's a ridiculous piece of photoshopping.
But, I mean, now whilst we're talking about kits, what have you made of the new ones, Marcus?
I like the home kit. I've actually bought a home and away because I'm a bit sad like that. But I do a lot of running these days, and they are very good running tops.
They are?
I the green one's sort of grown on me. Now I've got it in the flesh. I do like the home kit. I think it's a massive improvement on last year's three kits in one, a bit like this one that Phil's produced. I didn't like the home kit at all. Mind you, I didn't like the away yellow one either. Again, that just wrong yellow, silly sleeves.
Yeah,
so I'm glad that's been kicked into touch as a third kit. Green as an away colour, though, you know, it's a bit goalkeeper-y.
We know it is a traditional thing. I mean, it's a shirt that people
yes, make. It is, isn't it? That's the thing. The thing that's got me, I think, is I prefer blue shorts to white shorts, and I would have preferred black shorts to the green.
Well, history shows that we do alternate those.
I know, we do.
We spent more time in white shorts.
But I think it's... I know. Well, it's funny you say that, because most of the time I've been... Well, certainly since I've been watching the Albion, most of it's been blue. I know we have had white well. But
yeah. Not forgetting the Andy Pandy shorts, of course.
Well, yeah, of course, not forget. Yes, exactly. You can forget.
Try to please everyone and please no one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
What's your take on the
better
kit then,
than
Andy?
Last season's, I think, it's probably fair to say.
Yes, I like. Yeah, I like. I do like the home shirt. I'll need to see the away shirt in the flesh to be convinced of that.
It's the same as Portsmouth's home shirt, just in green.
The home shirt's terrific. I really like it. I don't really wear shirts anymore, but that is one that might tempt me into the shop. I do like it. I agree with Marcus. I hated that away kit last season, that yellow. It was just dour, which kind of matched football.
I've Barber's jumpers.
Paul Barber's jumpers are much more vibrant than our last season's away kit. I'd rather see us run out in that yellow.
Well, we have been very, very busy this transfer window. Some of the business was done very, very early. As I said in the intro, we had two players going to the World Cup, which very soon turned into three. We knew the identity of one of them being Liam Balogun. Leon Balogun. Who, of course, played for Nigeria in Russia. So what have we made of him so far?
I was really impressed with him in the World Cup. I think I mean Ryan had a good World Cup for Australia.
He had to,
but I thought Balogun was excellent. He defended really well. He was up against quality opposition. And funny enough, we were talking about like corners and like how players didn't produce from the corner in attacking ways, and he totally attacked the ball every single corner. He was the one he was the one guy that was attacking them for Nigeria. I just thought he looked really impressive. He looked calm in possession. He looked quite forceful in the challenge. He's got a chance of starting. If I was Duffy or Dunk, I would not want to get injured. Too early.
So what do you reckon to Ryan and Izquierdo's World Cups?
I thought Ryan had a really good one. Izquierdo, it was just like he sort of flitted in and out, really.
Did he only play for one half or something?
Yeah, well, he started their first game, but they had a player sent off after 5 minutes.
That's right.
After about 2 minutes.
So, yeah.
And he was not seen after that.
Mm. And the left-back playing behind was just point-blank refused to pass it to him. He was only a 17-year-old or something, and he just wouldn't pass it to him. Right. So
I am particularly pleased that he didn't actually play against England, though, because I just have visions of him coming on and scoring one of his magnificent goals. And
as we said last week, Colombia played this horrible anti-football. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
I hope that Izquierdo feels appalled by it because feel guilty about it, because, you know, if he's going to say, "Oh, my team did well and we were so unlucky," no, mate, you are horrible. You are just, you know, brutal. Carry on.
Yeah, but I've got Liam Balogun's stats here. I mean, he hasn't. He's not particularly a goal scorer, really. I mean, he played for Mainz from 2015 to 2018, making 52 appearances, only one goal. He did score. He was at Darmstadt before that, and he scored four goals for them. So, I mean, your goal is a defender. That's what he's.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah,
I mean, it's
keeping him out, mate. That's
but you know, idea. it's a player that's played at the World Cup. It's good for us, and it puts pressure on them, Duffy and Dunk, as we said there. Now, I mean, there is a possibility.
Well, to be fair, so did Goldson and Hunemeyer, and they couldn't hardly get a sniff.
But we're going to talk about the other players that we've signed in a second. But looking at the players that have come in, it does look like there may be a possible tweak to the formation. I mean, could you foresee us going to three at the back like everyone else seems to be doing at the moment?
No, because the only reason I say that is because we've only got three centre backs, and if one gets injured, then that's your plan up in smoke.
Well, we are looking to bring in another one before the window closes. So
yeah, I would say,
and Ben Hall hasn't gone out on loan yet, so.
I would say the opposite. I'm not suggesting that we will change, and certainly maybe not early on. I think it is something that Chris would like to have in his locker. I think that's why he tried it against Liverpool. I mean, you know, he just thought, well...
Chelsea.
He just thought, well, sorry, I'll have a go, because I've got nothing to lose in this game. I just thought, yeah, I'll give it a go. And the thing is that Balogun's really good. I mean, he's a
ball player.
He's a starting quality player, and you know, it increases competition, but it also gives him the freedom to maybe play those three. And then with the sort of fullback winger situation, he's got a lot of flexibility there. He could, you know,
I agree with Andy.
I think he wants to do it. Whether we're good enough to do it is another thing.
I think I think Andy's right, but I think what it is more a case of could be also used as a tactical change in game.
Yeah,
because you know, for the after sort of, you know, 30, not after 30 minutes, but you know, with half an hour to go or whatever, you know, he can switch it to free back. Whereas last season it was very much, oh, Murray off, Hemed on, you know, March off, Nocky on, you know, it was kind of Kaya off, Stevens on.
It was like for like,
left back. Yeah, whereas this time he can probably now throw Balogun on.
Really
right, let's
point.
Go three at the back. Let's try and win
the
this.
The point about that is that last season we had four pretty decent centre backs. And he still played mostly, apart from the Chelsea game, the two. In fact, actually, Shane Duffy looked horribly out of position. I'd have much preferred it to have been Dunk, Hunemeyer, and Goldson playing in those positions. Because when you're three at the back, you have to have ball-playing ones rather than sort of like, you know, the towering donkey. But the other thing is that if we do have that in mind to 2-3 at the back, and we're still looking for players, they haven't had that pre-season. And so Chris hasn't had it in mind. I don't know, I'm guessing here, but Chris hasn't had the players in place to actually train and rehearse that three at the back. Mm. Unless you're saying if Ben Hall is one of those that's doing that, or we've got three centre. I mean, of those who are definite first team possibilities, we've lost two and gained one.
Mm. Okay, well, let's talk about one that we have lost. Which is Connor Goldson, which I was absolutely devastated about, to be honest.
Yeah, but you can understand why. And he's
the guy wants to play, and you know, and his hero growing up was Steven Gerrard. So
we all have our cross to bear.
But I mean, he's a Liverpool fan, so I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why he wanted to go to the Monkey Tennis League. I think it took a long time for that deal to go through, and I think there was a lot of thrashing out of various
Rangers
details.
Rangers are skint, aren't they?
I'm hoping that it's somewhere in there is an option to buy back.
No, I think...
I think
it's not the option to buy back. I mean, no, I don't go for that at all. The point is that it's a fella who wanted first-team football. If he was going to go anywhere else in the Premier League, then Brighton wouldn't have sold to him. So he's got to go to the next best place. And I think it's just, unless he went to France or Belgium or something like that, then it was going to be Scotland. Because, you know, yes, I think he is Premier League quality, but he still has to get past Duffy and Dunk. And that's actually still going to be quite an ask. Yes, Balogun is good. Yes, the next person who comes in might be good. But, you know, I can't see at the moment, unless Chris has a major sort of change of heart or change of mind, then Duffy and Dunk are still going to be our fellows. So.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another one that's come in, which is, of course, Brazilian Bernie, as he will no doubt be known. But
no doubt.
Bernardo da Silva, Marcus.
Yes. Well, I mean, he's probably he's a left back, isn't he? By
left
trade.
Back, right back.
Yeah. Okay. Let's say left back, centre half. Yeah. Okay. So utility player. Yeah. But basically, I think he's been brought in to put pressure on Bong. I know we've got Suttner, but Suttner for me hasn't quite done it, and he was sort of, to me, he was part of a defence that was sort of leaking silly goals when everybody was scoring from a set piece every week. It wasn't Suttner's fault, of course it wasn't. It's just, guilt by association. I think a couple of times this pre-season, from what I've read though, Chris has been trying him out on the wing and stuff like that because he's got a good ball delivery. So Chris has been mixing up in some of it, certainly in his behind closed doors friendlies.
In which case, let me put that throw, unless completely 180 compared to what I've just said. If that's the case, then perhaps Chris is looking to go three at the back and Silva is the man on the left.
Could very well be. Yeah.
That could well be, in which case you've got to find three defenders. But when I was saying this at the same time, I'm thinking, well, perhaps Bernardo is one of the three at the back. So if he's utility, where's he going to play? Is he going to be
Bernardo,
one of those?
I've got his stats here from this Wikipedia.
We're guessing.
So it's clearly wrong. But playing position, it says fullback midfielder.
All right.
That's a hell of a position, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I know we're trying to get Liam Moore in at the moment, and if that doesn't pan out, then I suspect that Brazilian Bernie would be the in quotes fourth choice centre back option.
Bruno would be fifth choice centre back. He's done that before as well.
I'd rather not play centre back than have Bruno at centre back. But I think you know his value is utility, but again, you know, another sort of football player. It's just someone who gives Hughton more options. I think last year Hughton had a set plan. He thought, okay, you know, he was conservative, but he thought, well, this, I know this will work. It won't be pretty sometimes, but it'll get the job done. Mm. And then, you know, it got to this summer and they hit the ground running with the transfers, getting Andone in, who they've been chasing for 2 years, getting him straight away, but then also getting Balogun early, getting, you know, and getting someone of that caliber in early, getting Burnie in, and then obviously ending up with the coup de grace of Hambach at the end of it, who's, you know, got everybody excited.
Bernardo's he's got his career path's been quite interesting, though. I mean, it's all about Red Bull, basically. It was at Red Bull Brazil, Red Bull Salzburg, and then RB Leipzig, which
and now it's going to be Twacker.
And
to mix it up.
Yeah, and Salzburg and Leipzig were both very good teams.
Other hangover liqueurs are available, by the way.
Okay, well, Andy briefly touched on him there. Florin Andone, that was a player we've been after for quite some time, a bit like Johan Bash, but we'll come to him shortly. But if we got a bargain in the end, we hope so.
We did. And it was evident that he would have been the Hemed replacement, because if we'd signed him at that time, and Hemed would have gone to Reading or somewhere, I think it was, wasn't it? But Deportivo pulled the plug because, for whatever reason,
they couldn't get a replacement for him.
That's right, or something like that. So, of course, great that Deportivo got relegated. I am sorry for them, but it meant Paul Barber, you know, saved a few quid in cash. So
it's quite a big
go towards the staff
well,
Christmas
it?
Party.
It went from spending 17 million to 5 million.
Do you suppose that's how we've got Gross so cheap in that case? Because we got possibly, from a relegated club.
Could possibly be a being.
Possibly. I mean, we got Sintner from the same club as well, didn't we? So
And it cost, what, Tottenham's halfpenny?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was...
So what do we know about Andone? What have you got for stats then, mate?
Andone, here we go. Right, obviously we know...
Mean, we don't, is it Andone or Andone?
Andone,
I think.
Not Andone.
It says, this is his Wikipedia page. It's like, his stats are Brighton Hove Albion, appearances none, goals none.
Thanks, mate. Well,
that's a pretty cool show.
Well, he's rubbish, obviously.
He is, yeah. Get rid.
Yeah. But he's been Deportivo for 2 years, only there from 2016 to 2018, 66 appearances, 18 goals. He was at Cordoba before that, 56 appearances and 26 goals. Now,
that's not rubbish in La Liga.
And he's obviously a player that we'd highlighted alongside the guy. I mean, we've got to give credit to our recruitment team because. They very rarely have got it wrong.
Last year's recruitment was for all those that were brought in specifically as first team players. None of them were poor. No. None of them. I mean, those that might argue that Suttner was the least, or maybe Lacardi was the least, but above and beyond that, you know, everyone put in a shift. I mean, well, especially with Proper and Gross, for instance.
You see, that's what makes me wonder about, again, we talked about the shift to possibly three at the back, but maybe playing 3-5-2.
Well, the thing is about playing three at the back is it's supposed to be fluid, that the two wing-backs are going to operate as either defenders or as wingers, given on the particular circumstance of how the game's going. So,
but, I mean, reading between the lines between what Chris Hughton's been saying, both at the end of last season and beginning of this pre-season, he's saying, yeah, well, Lacardia is this. He's more a signing for next year. He's going to be starting more games next year. And now we've brought in Andone as well. Could you see? We don't know anything at this stage. I can't second guess. I mean, I've looked at the squad. I've looked at all the signings we've made. I have no idea what our team's going to be. I can tell you. I've got a very good idea what it's going to be against Watford. Probably the same team that finished last season. Largely.
I'm not very far from convinced.
I think anyone, probably Ryan Duffy Dunk, and then after that.
Yeah, that's anyone's guess.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see Stevens and Proper keeping their place. You can see Gross keeping his place. I think after that, everyone's.
Yeah.
You know, the spine is largely. I'm not convinced Murray will start. I mean, we love the fella, but, you know, sorry, he does need replacing sooner rather than later. You know, he's knocking 35, which is great. If he's good enough, he's old enough, or he's young enough, whatever it might be. But, you know, if we're going to progress, we've got to actually sort of stop relying on Glenn Murray so much.
I agree. I, whether Andone or Lacardia, you know, strike goals.
Or even Jahanbakhsh.
Oh, yeah, and Jahanbakhsh as well. We're kind of, that's really the way that this club moves forward. If, if one or two of those guys actually starts to contribute to the bottom line when it comes to goal scoring, because Glenn basically carried that team from the front.
Yeah.
And it's a big ask for a man at his stage of the career, his career. I can see him being, coming on for half an hour and then nicking a goal, just because he's a very clever footballer and can take advantage of tiring defences.
I think his contract with Advanced Hair Studio says he's got to stop play a couple of games.
And it just means that, it's not all down to Murray. And I think there's something about this Andone guy that they like. They pushed after him. They kept tabs on him and they got their man and for a bargain price. And the same with Jahanbakhsh, again, a player that they clearly believed was going to contribute to the team, and they were patient enough to wait around for him to become better than he was when we picked him up.
He just didn't want to play in the Championship, though, did he?
No, it wasn't him. He wanted to come to Brighton, but he was advised it would be better for his career for him. I think his agent said, the Championship might be a bit rough and tumble for you. Why don't you grow up a little bit, get a bit stronger, improve as a player, and then you can come and play in England and you'd be able to cope with it.
At this point, Andy, about Jahanbakhsh, I should point everyone in the direction. There's something on our Twitter feed. We'd copy it across to our Facebook page as well. But there was an article written by a Dutch journalist, which is absolutely brilliant, about Jahanbakhsh, about how much respected he was, to the fact that he was actually dropped from one game because it was away to an Israeli team in Europe, and that Iran doesn't recognise Israel as a team, so basically he couldn't have that stamp in his passport to play if he was to play for Iran.
That's a bit weird.
Yeah, I know, it's very strange, but I mean
we're not going to go down that road on this show
for sure. But it was a really, really good article, so I mean, check that out. But
he doesn't score tap-ins either.
Oh, no. his goal really.
To be fair, the Iranian fans did say, don't judge him by what you saw in the World Cup, which is just as well, because I do remember watching him and I thought he was dog mess. He was hopeless.
Well, let's say goodbye to you, Sam Baldock.
Bye, okay. Sam.
Cheers, Sam. Thanks for coming. Cheers for coming. Thanks. Close the door.
Now, I know you weren't his biggest fan, Marcus.
No,
but
I wasn't.
Weren't you? No, I did like him.
To be fair, I wasn't under the sort of Sammy and sort of Chris season, and I expected more from him. He certainly delivered in the season we went up, and it was a shame he got injured, because he was actually becoming, I thought, a really, really decent striker, good player. And it's a shame, whether they were in his head or whether he did have injury problems, I don't know. Mm. I would have liked to have seen him more last season.
I would have loved to have seen him more last season. And I think he is certainly good enough to play at this level. I mean, what you see with Sam Baldock,
He never has, though.
But he's a player's player. He is basically, he's unselfish. And the work that he does off the ball, the stuff that most people don't really see or appreciate. But what
I can say that about Dale Stevens, by the way. I've just got my Dale Stevens gripe in there, but I can say that about him as well. Sorry, carry on.
No,
but yes, I mean, Phil.
But I mean, what he was, his unselfish running and stuff. Yep. I mean, at the end of the day, strikers usually are judged by the number of goals they score.
And he scored.
But I mean, with Sam Baldock, he led the line in a different way, and he created more goals and for players by his unselfish work. Than
who would you have played him instead of last season then?
That's a very good question. I mean, but
it's a great question, mate. I've got another one later if you want.
But I mean,
I certainly would have liked him probably coming off the bench more, when you could see Gross was tiring on the 75th minute.
I think that's,
after puffing that's cheeks exactly and Chris was think, waiting till the 88th, and you're like, well done. And this is one of the frustrations as well. Done, Chris. It's the 88th minute. He's virtually played the full game now. Why don't you hoik him off at 75? Not because Gross was rubbish. Far from it. His record spoke for himself. But when he was blowing chunks, because this was his first season, someone like a Sam Baldock would have been possibly ideal. Because we know he can defend as well, Sam. Okay. He's not short of putting a shift in. So anyway, but that's by the by, he's gone.
And basically, Sam said that he doesn't think he's failed at this level because he wasn't given the opportunity to fail.
Yeah, and I agree. I think he made one appearance against West Brom or something, and that was it. West Brom, that's another one where it was...
let's not talk about that.
Okay,
let's just quickly say hello to Yves Bissouma.
Say that again.
Yves Bissouma. Who's... Basically, he's been very much rated compared to the Paul Pogba that doesn't play for Man United.
That'll do me. Okay.
He looks pretty handy, yeah. I think. And I think he's...
I think he's Sam Baldock plus one, isn't
he's
he?
He's an interesting... Well, I mean, he's actually one of my prediction answers. Okay. But I think he's a very interesting-looking player. He does like to bring it forward. He's good with the ball at his feet. He's very positive in trying to get forward. And apparently he can take a free kick.
Yes.
Smash.
Okay, just quickly before we move on, Youri Skelak's gone to Millwall, which...
never mind.
He scored the best goal of the Amex era, in my view. But
I think that's a fair point. And
so
also
did Ryan Harley, but you know,
he really didn't.
Well, he scored a good free kick.
No, having said that, to be fair with Skalak, he didn't shine in the promotion season, but the season before, he was brilliant. I mean, he would come on, and he was the one who can actually put the free kick on a sixpence,
yeah.
Where some of the crosses were just wild. He couldn't beat anyone. But he could actually sort of, you know, there's something, you know, I remember at Milton Keynes, he came on and stuck it on Tom Ahmed's head. Obviously, there's the thunder smash against QPR. There was, you know, free kicks that came in. No, he was better that season. I mean, he was almost virtually anonymous in the promotion season.
Yeah, although he did play against Middlesbrough in the cup. He got injured in that game, but he was showing signs of getting back to
But also, he did take the greatest photo of any Albion player
in
their back garden that's ever been taken.
I think it's a great move for him. Yeah. I think he'll do really well there. I think he'll fit in well with the team, and I think the fans will really like his aggressive style of play.
And also, I think I read earlier that I think it was apparently it's Neil Harris's third window in a row that he's trying to get hold of him.
Really?
Yeah.
He's handbacks all over again.
Yeah. As much as I dislike Millwall, I think they're a really handy team, and they could be sniffing around the playoffs again.
We also signed the much maligned Jason Steele, but he's worked with Ben Roberts before, so I'm very much.
I don't care what Sunderland fans think, frankly.
Sunderland are rubbish anyway. So.
Yeah, quite. As if I'm going to take a lecture from a Sunderland fan about football quality.
He was probably trying to get sacked.
But I'm happy to take Ben Roberts' judgment on that and David Button. We've also. Nicky Nempire's gone to Bristol City with. Hilarious response from Bristol City fans, but that's
silly
another
little
story.
People.
And we also signed Percy Tau, who's going to go out on loan somewhere, but he's highly rated, one for next year maybe. I think is that to do with the work permit issue? I don't know.
We'll worry about it later.
Yeah.
But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on our podcast and on DAB and everywhere. If you can't find us, you're not trying hard enough. And of course, we're brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. Now, we've been asking for your predictions over the last week for the coming season, such things as top goal scorer, player of the season. We've got our own ones, which we're going to go through now. So, Marcus.
Yep.
Who do you, your prediction this season for top goal scorer?
I'm going for Glenn Murray again. I know what you're laughing for. He's the only proven Premier League striker that we've got at the club.
Are you saying that Eredivisie doesn't count?
Yes, at the moment, because it's not the Premier League.
We've had a...
you sound so much like Martin Tyler.
Maybe I do, but...
We've had a really big response to this year. And
I love Glenn.
And 21% of people believe in you. But, Andy, you're top goal scorer.
I'm going to take a flyer on Florian Andone. I just think they like him enough. I like his style of play, the fox in the box, which I think we've been lacking, and that's the sort of player we've been looking for to fit in with how we play. I don't know. I mean, I think Murray is a safer bet, but I'm going to go for Andone.
Okay.
I think likewise. I'm also going to really stick my neck out here and say that the second top scorer, just because I believe he's actually going to sort himself out, will be Lewis Dunk.
Interesting.
Second top scorer.
What about your top then?
No, it's Andonio.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's a wild.
That is a wild, wild card.
I kind of agree with Marcus. I still think the old man's still going to be the top scorer.
Okay. All right. So what's the next question?
From our responses on Twitter and Facebook, Andoni 45%, Murray 21%, Lacardia 21%, and Jahanbash at 12%. I also asked Adam Virgo.
Oh,
and Adam has said top goal scorer. He can't spell it, but Jahanbash.
Okay, Jahanbash. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so next question we asked was who will get the most assists for the Albion this year, which isn't one which on the official list.
The most assists.
But everyone's gone for Pascal
Everyone's
Gross.
Gone for Gross. They can't see past Gross. That's probably not
Jahanbash again was...
Although I noticed that no one put in the people who were in second place, and it was equal. That was Purper and Stevens, both equal in second place with assists.
Oh, okay.
And if we're going to play in, it depends. I mean, I think that it's going to depend on how we set up. We'll actually determine as to how.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, I think everyone's saying Gross again.
Yeah. Okay. So player of the season. Song with you, Al.
Just because he deserves it once in his lifetime, I'm going to go for Lewis Dunk again. I mean, what does he have to do to win it?
Alan not saying Dale Stevens Shocker.
He's going to have to play better than Ali Reza Jahanbash to win player of the season this season.
And Marcus Hancock.
Because he'll be top scorer and will save us yet again.
Glenn Murray.
Yes.
He got nowhere near the... Okay, what's yours then? What's yours, Odie?
I am going to go Lewis Dunk.
Okay.
I think. I think that... I don't know. We've got... I mean, Lewis... I don't know how Lewis hasn't got it before, but, I mean, it's been... We do tend to vote for defenders, and I think it's going to be a long, hard season again, so
we
I think that...
We haven't for a while, have we?
The last one was Cowdy, wasn't it?
That was a kind of sympathy vote, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the season Dunk should have got it as well.
Well, exactly.
It was his 8 goals at... kept us up. By
well, absolutely.
Those.
I mean, Cowdy was quite embarrassed about that. Yeah. I mean, he was actually a little bit annoyed.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, from the vote, Jahanbash 28%, Dunk 28%, so equal. Gross 16%, Basuma, people rating him quite a lot, 13. Matty Ryan's got 9%, and Knockart and Stevens have got 3%.
Stevens will never win it because Stevens is horribly underrated, and I can't understand why. Okay. So I hate you all.
Okay, so the surprised package.
Surprise.
Of...
How can we predict something that's a surprise? It won't be a surprise.
Well, I mean, for instance, last year I predicted this as a surprise package as Baram Kyle because
it was surprising.
The reason I said that last season was because he's a magnificent player and people have forgotten how good he was. And there was a spell when he got a run in the team where he was man of the match in every go.
Really?
Crystal Palace away, for instance.
I'd rather not talk about that.
No.
I've still got the scars from that game, thank you very much.
Give us your surprise package then, as it were, Marcus.
My surprise package? That's a very good question. I'm going to have to go for... is it a surprise? I think it's got to be Bissouma, simply on the basis of he's young and he's raw. I was going to say Hambash, but I guess because he's a bit more of a seasoned pro.
Go on, Andy.
Well, funnily enough, I've gone for Bissouma. And the reason why I'm saying surprise package is he plays in the position of basically one of the two stalwarts of our team, David Purper and Dale Stevens. He plays in that region of the pitch. Yeah. And I think the surprise will be that he will dislodge one of them and make a spot his own. I just think he offers more positivity than both Purper and Stevens did last season, although they may have been acting under orders.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's difficult to judge that. But I just like the look of him already. And I just think, you know, with Andone and Jahanbash being like the star signings and Bissouma came in and he's kind of like under the radar. And I think he might start beeping on that radar.
Okay, my surprise package is Dale Stevens, who will be finally appreciated.
Oh. But that's not a surprise because he's always good.
He's not appreciated. He's us four in this room might know
so
he's quite good.
The surprise will be him being noticed.
That's my point. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go for Victor Gyökeres, or however you pronounce it.
Yeah,
Gyökeres. Oh, Gyökeres, yeah. Fella. Yeah.
Reckon he's going to break through?
Well, there is a possibility that he could still go out online. I mean, that there's discussing that with David Weir and Chris at the moment, and they're not quite sure what he's going to do. He doesn't, because he's with the under 21s, etc., and with an academy player. He doesn't actually need to be named in the 25, but he is. Someone who he's been involved in all of the games. He's been away with the first team, and he's been getting noticed.
And he scored, didn't he?
Against Nice.
So, for instance, he's League Cup fodder then.
I think he may
That's
be.
A good
I mentioned Aaron Connolly last year in the same breath, and I think that he could possibly, when we had John Morley, the academy director, in last year, they were saying when we were looking for a striker last season that. Aaron Connolly was very much in their thoughts for fast tracking through to the first team squad, but then he got picked up an injury.
The fact that they've been quite open about the discussions they're having back at Lancing as to whether they're putting the option on the table, saying no, this is a kid that we might actually keep in the first team squad and not let him go away on loan. I think it's really important that they've actually made that public. It does show that they're very confident in him. And I think, that's a good choice for surprise package.
Yeah, I like that. Actually, yeah. But I'm still going to go for Dale Stephen.
Other than that, I'm going for Glenn Murray.
He has a surprise package, does he? What hair?
Just to rewind quickly, Adam Virgo's player of the season was Lewis Dunk. And his surprise package was... I might make a show.
Oh, really? The surprise package being Andy doesn't.
Okay, next on the list is number of away wins.
I would be delighted with 5.
I'm going to go with, because I think last season we only won two wasn't it? One of which was Swansea and the other one
was West Ham.
Of course, we went both of them. So I think, I would go for at least double that, but 5. Let's go for 5.
Burgo's gone for 4, Marcus. Andy?
Well, I actually have it written down here.
As five.
5, there you go.
And they will be.
It's a
Cardiff, Watford, yeah. Palace, nice, Man U, Man City, Spurs, Arsenal, Southampton. I mean, with those games last season where we underperformed away from home, if we can actually make that leap up, turn defeats into draws, draws into victories.
I think 5 is a big ask. I would have that as one of my bolder predictions. I think 5 is a big ask.
But it's an aspirational target.
But I think it is an aspirational target. And I think, I think there are some games where if we just push a little bit harder, we can get those results.
Okay.
It depends on the what the next questions are, because Ailey's mixed them up a bit. But the away wins, I think out of that 5, one of them will be against a big 6 team.
You reckon?
I reckon.
Wow.
Yeah. It might be a nicked one, but I reckon one of them will be against... Okay. Because we've done it at home now, so the next thing is, an improvement, is let's get one of these away.
Okay.
They all lose surprise games.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Okay, one that Al asked to... the Twitter and Facebook group, who will receive the most yellow cards this season?
I know, they seem to think that Duffy or Dunk are the most violent people, bearing in mind... Do you know who received the most yellow cards last year?
Glenn Murray, wasn't it?
It was, Glenn Murray, yeah.
He got 6% of the vote, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Shane Duffy.
Everyone says Shane Duffy, haven't they?
Yeah, 41% Shane Duffy, 31% Lewis Dunk. Okay,
if he plays, I'm going to go for Glenn Murray again.
Yeah, that's probably right. Who will score the best goal? Ooh. I'm going to measure this by, because obviously we'll come back.
Is it by the official goal of the season?
It will be voted the official goal of the season. Yeah, I mean, the one that I thought was the best goal of the last season didn't actually win.
Was it? I was about to say the best goal of the season wasn't the best goal of the season. It was scored by the same player.
Esquerdo.
I mean, it was the West Ham game at home that you got the goal of the season, but it should have been the one away at Stoke.
Fair point.
What is wrong with you people?
Well, it's a great team goal, the Stoke goal, but the way he just got that into that top corner was just exquisite.
So is he going to do the same again this season?
I've gone for Ali J for best goal. He seems to specialise in
spectacular
spanking it from outside the box.
I'm going to go for Bissouma again. I think he's going to do a jinking run and crack it in the top corner.
He does like a jink. Does like a jink.
Now that's Mark Brailsford.
He's got to get in the team for
that's Mark Brailsford. He likes a jink. I'm going to go for one of these days. His amazing run is going to work. I'm going to go for Lewis Dunk.
What's the best goal?
One of these days, he's going to break out the centre back position. You know, he'll go raiding through, and he'll get a 1-2 with someone, and he'll finally larrup it into the top corner.
I think all of our answers have been wild card answers.
We're coming to this.
I've only been watching the Albion for 40 years. I mean, could you actually try and predict anything with the Albion?
No, not at all.
Exactly. Who's going to score the best goal?
Esquerdo.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And Adam Virgo has said.
Esquadru. That's close enough,
good spelling, Adam.
Okay, and wild card now, isn't it?
Yeah, the wild card. Well, let's go to...
Please don't read all of them. There's about 40.
Someone said Cardiff would do the double over us. Really?
Yeah.
That's obviously a Cardiff
We've got... other people have said we'll beat one of the top big six away.
Well,
we've already
said
that.
Didn't you,
we'll do the double over a top six side, someone said.
If we beat them at their place, then there's a reasonable chance.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it, last season we lost one very closely to Manchester United twice at their place, and yet so many people were convinced that we were going to beat them at our place. We did.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a hell of a sort of a cocky attitude to have. We were so close against Man United at their place, therefore we're doing them at our place.
Yeah, and
we did owe them.
You're not going to get the same again this year.
What a match that was.
Matt Potter has said Duffy will score a goal from a corner with his head.
That is a wild card.
That is a wild card.
But he's also said the player of the season will be Fliss Gibbons.
Fliss Gibbons?
His muse in the women's team. So,
right, okay. Yeah. Oh, fine.
But, Esquerdo will win the Puskas Award.
Puskas Award is the world goal of the season.
Ooh. Oh, right, okay.
Bissouma has to score from outside. There's loads here. Houghton does a touchline slide after a
sort of time.
resulting in a 12-match ban.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay, so come on, guys, wild cards.
Wild cards. I'm going to go for the fact that because we've got such a big squad now and he needs to keep everybody happy, I think we're going to get into the semi-final of one of the Cups.
Okay.
At least this year.
I can see that.
Okay. Or the Sussex Senior Cup.
Yeah, basically.
Andy Bass, your wild card, please.
Given that I, reflecting my positive attitude, this whole thing, I think we will have two players that will score more than 10 goals. I think we'll have two goal scorers in double figures.
Really?
Yeah.
Alan Wears, your wild card.
I think that Glenn Murray will become the highest ever post-war goal scorer for the Albion. He needs another six, another seven, I think.
Ooh.
That's actually the most conservative answer you've given.
I don't understand AD's questions, frankly.
Because I can see him getting six.
I can see him getting
Someone here said the woman behind me at the Amex will stop slagging off her players from the third minute onwards.
We've all got neighbours like that.
Brilliant.
I'm going to get Lewis Dunk will get an England cap.
Ooh. Yeah.
Tell you what, I think actually if gets all injured, of them, I think that's the wildest one. I genuinely do.
Mm. Yeah, I think he's got to work hard to get into that team.
He's still
now.
Got way too much traffic ahead of him. Yeah.
Okay, we are running out of time, so just finally then, I've lost my questions. Which of our new signings will have the biggest impact?
Johan Bach.
Yeah, I'd go with Andy.
So he's the star man.
Yep.
He's the one. He's the one.
Move over, knockout. It's a new man in town.
There we go. The prize package of the season could be Anthony Knockout because no one's talking about him.
It could be Solly March. Wow. And he's signed up for another 4 years.
So we'll say Shahan Bach.
Lewis
Dunk. Yeah. Or Glenn Murray Allen. Yeah.
Stevens, that's it. Yeah.
There is another one here, English which people, is Will Phil get Louise a cat?
Yeah. Let's save that for another show.
Okay. It's good. But that's it. That's all we got time for this week. It's been absolutely wonderful to be back in your ears again. And thank you to Marcus Hancock. Thank you to Andy Bass. Thank you to Alan Wears. I'm Ailey Packham. Yeah, it's just been great being back in the saddle.